The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. For a free financial survival toolkit and newsletter, sign up at kerrylutz.com. KerryLutz.com.
This is 1490 WGCH. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. My next guest, Mickey Fulp, bills himself as the mercenary geologist. He's got over 30 years experience looking for valuable deposits, often in the wilderness. Mickey, are you there?
I am, Kerry.
Mickey, thanks so much for being on the show. Can you tell us exactly what a mercenary geologist is?
I think all geologists, for the most part, are mercenary. There are very few geologists that have what you would call regular jobs. So a mercenary is someone for hire. I have been for hire as a consulting geologist for over 24 years now. And so when I launched my analyst business about 4 years ago, I adopted that moniker, and it served me well.
Interesting. So most geologists work under contract to various natural resource development companies, so there's no steady employment in the field. Is that correct?
That's correct. I have not had a regular paycheck since my six-year tenure with Santa Fe Mining in the 1980s, and that ended 24 years ago, so haven't had a regular paycheck since then, and I'm very comfortable with that.
I always have a view of a geologist traveling around the world looking for oil, gas, gold, silver, or something of value. Is it a solitary life? Is it a life you'd want your kids to have?
Exciting.
Some of the above. It certainly is exciting. It's an adventure. Sometimes difficult, sometimes it's quite pleasurable. You get to see the world at someone else's expense. But I would not say there is any security in the job. The natural resource business, as we all know, runs in boom and bust cycles. So at times I've been pretty poor, and at other times I've been quite well off. So it's got its ups and downs, but for someone like me, for a single guy, I would consider it just about the best job in the world. Pays well, and it's a vagabond lifestyle, and that fits me well.
And this is one of those times when geologists do quite well, isn't it?
It certainly is.
We were talking about natural gas. To me, natural gas is so obviously an undervalued play right now. The ratio of petroleum-based BTUs versus natural gas-based BTUs is staggering. It's way higher. What's keeping the world from figuring this out? I just don't understand it.
Well, we've discovered probably too much natural gas, and that's part of the problem. And I will address this strictly in North American-centric viewpoint, because the gas market is very much location dependent, and what we're talking about is gas in North America, especially in the United States. If you do a BTU equivalent for a barrel of oil or an MCF of gas, the ratio is basically 6 to 1. So a barrel of oil provides more or less 6 times the energy that an MCF of gas will. So that logically would lead one to believe that the oil to gas price should be about 6 to 1. It has not been 6 to 1 for quite some time now. Last time we saw that would have been pre-financial crisis in about mid-2006 to mid-2007, something like that. That ratio is now 20 to 1. So that tells you basically that either oil is overbought and overpriced, or gas is depressed, and the price of gas, in my opinion, is quite depressed.
Right, so it's kind of like the play on the silver to gold ratio. It's the same type of thing. So
yeah.
I believe that over time markets will find their true value. You saw sugar, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you couldn't give sugar away. I mean, the grandmothers in Florida weren't even stealing it off the tables. That's how cheap it was. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's a 2 cents, then it's a 12 cents. Is that going to happen in natural gas at some point?
Well, you would expect so. You know, it burns cleaner than oil or coal. It's the cleanest burning fossil fuel. So there's many environmental reasons to turn more to gas. The problem we have in the United States is over the course of the last 10 years or so, and especially in the last 5 years, there's been new horizontal and fracking technologies developed, which has made gas that was not available in the past now technologically and economically available. And essentially what we're looking at now with the shale gas plays is we're looking at source rocks. We've always known that oil has source rocks. It migrates into host rocks. Well, with new technology, essentially the ability to fracture the rock in a horizontal manner has released, through technology, has made available more gas. The problem in the United States is we don't have the infrastructure to deal with that increased supply of gas, and as a result, gas wells have been drilled and they're shut in because there's not pipelines, there's not storage capacity, there's not separation capacity, plus the price is at $4 an MCF. So do the math and you basically learn that gas business right now is not especially good.
The way I see it, like you said, it burns cleaner. It's a suitable substitution to actually run transportation vehicles. There's conversion kits, but like you said, there's no infrastructure. And getting into, this is a little bit into the minutia of natural gas extraction, but you have this stuff that I've read about called natural gasoline, casehead gasoline, and much of the United States and North America's supply of gasoline actually comes from natural gas collection. And wouldn't that be enough to get these energy companies really looking for infrastructure to develop it and get it going?
Well, you would think so, but there's a couple of problems here. You know, transportation is one of the places that the gas demand can certainly grow. Right now we use 3% of our gas for transportation purposes. It's ideally suited for small mass transit vehicles, buses, et cetera, minivans, fleet vehicles, cargo vehicles, can all burn very well. Even your family car can run on natural gas quite well. The problem is we don't have the fueling infrastructure, so you can't just pull off the interstate at every exit and fill your car up with natural gas. That's one of the main problems right now. And then probably the biggest problem we have in this country, it comes from the NIMBY and the banana crowds, not in my backyard, build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything. And that has killed the ability for us to become more energy self-sufficient. We have enough gas in the United States to supply the country with well over 100 years of natural gas. We could be self-sufficient and an exporter of natural gas, but we're not. And we could wean ourselves a lot off of unfriendly countries if we could convert some of our oil and coal usage into natural gas. There's no reason we can't do that, except we apparently don't have the will. We have the goal, we have the means. Apparently we don't have the will in this country to do that.
Yeah, that's kind of distressing. It's got to be distressing to somebody like you who's in the business of finding this stuff to produce it. You find it, and then, like you say, these NIMBY banana groups say, thanks, Mickey, but you know what? We don't really want it. Let's import it so the country can go broke and so we can rely on unstable geopolitical situations, i.e. the Middle East. And that's got to be incredibly frustrating to you, because I'm sure when you went to school, they said, you know, if you find it, they will come. You know, you just have to find the stuff and the customers will flock to you. And now you've got to be scratching your head, right?
Well, yeah, everything you said is bang on. You know, I actually have a degree from a petroleum geology school, University of Tulsa. So I was trained, at least in my undergrad career, as an oil and gas geologist. Now, I left that business quite soon and for the field adventures that come from mineral exploration. It's not available in the oil and gas business for a large part. But we've done our job too well as geologists and engineers. We've found all this gas, and we've overwhelmed the infrastructure that's available to transport it, to store it, to separate it, to refine it, and to refuel. So until we build out the infrastructure, the gas business is going to struggle in this country. T. Boone Bickens, in my opinion, has it exactly right with his idea of natural gas for transportation. You know, do the math. Right now we import 9.4 million barrels of oil a year. We import 9.4 million barrels a day.
Right.
From largely unfriendly countries or countries that do not have the U.S. interest in mind. At $85 a barrel of oil, that's $900 million a day, 365 days a year, is almost $300 billion a year of dollars that we are printing to send overseas. And not only does that affect the U.S., it affects the world, too. We're essentially exporting our inflation, our dollars, inflated dollars for oil, and so that raises the price of oil. It also creates ramifications in developing countries, for instance, food inflation, food riots. You know, we've seen three, and soon to be four, Middle Eastern governments that collect petrol dollars fall this year. And that basically has to do with food inflation.
Yeah, and you know, I think I mentioned to you, I was out in Vegas. They picked me up at the airport, car from the casino. They send out the car, and I look, and it's a stretch town car limo, and it says CNG powered on the back. So I said, wow, this is great. Finally, because I've been looking for a conversion kit for one of my cars, and the only conversion kit on the market is for like a 1977 Chevrolet Caprice in the U.S. Nothing else has been approved by the EPA. So I'm saying, oh, this is great. And he's telling me, yeah, we take it to this fueling station outside the casinos. They fill it up, and it's not quite as fast as gasoline because obviously it doesn't have the BTUs and the combustibility of a gallon of gasoline, but it runs a bit quieter. You could breathe the fumes from the tailpipe and not kill yourself almost. And just said, this just makes too much sense. And you go over to like Thailand, and they have these little tricycle things called putt-putts, and they're propane powered. It's like a three-wheel, you know, they call them pedicabs in New York, but you know, it's got a propane canister underneath the passenger seat, so if you get hit hard enough from behind, you're going to get blown up. But the things work, and they're efficient, and they're fairly safe. There aren't too many explosions. And yet we can't have that in this country. So what's the prognosis? Do we have to have this collapse before everyone comes to their senses? Or is there a way to make people understand this without there being a collapse?
Well, you got to hope that people like T. Boone Pickens, and one of the smartest guys in the world, although he's getting pretty old now, that people start listening to him, because he's got it absolutely right. All we can do is talk about it in the media, you know, get on the bully pulpit, which I tend to do on occasion, and let people know what's going on, and hopefully at some point we will see a better market. Really, the problem right now is low cost. If gas went back up to $6 or $7 or $8, then we would see increased exploration. We would see pipelines being built to move the gas from fields into to separation facilities. So it basically is a matter of supply-demand economics right now. And when that's going to happen, I don't know. I've been looking the natural gas business to make a play in it with some companies for about 3 years and now. And luckily, although I'm a contrarian and I tend to get into plays early, I haven't moved into natural gas, so but I'm always watching.
Well, I have to tell you, I wasn't going to talk about my portfolio choices, but in 2009, I noticed that all of the natural gas MLPs basically had busted out. They were down, some of them, 75, 85, 90%, and they were yielding, and that's the nice thing, the MLP plays in resources, they have to pay out all of their earnings, and they were yielding, you know, anywhere from 10 to 14%. And I said, you know, no matter what happens in the world, you got to heat your house. You know, you're going to have to, we have to use natural gas to generate electricity to a small percentage. So the demand is locked in place. So I went into all of them at that time. Not all of them, but, you know, like ones like Regency Partners, EVEP, I can't even remember the other ones, like three or four of them. And they really exploded on the upside because they had been beaten down so badly. All of a sudden, everybody saw the yields on these things. And now I'm kind of stuck with them. They've doubled and tripled. And I don't have any other place to put my money because where am I getting that kind of return? They're still yielding on the price 7-8%. So you'd think that would turn a lot of heads on Wall Street, especially with yields at zero, and people would get into it and say, this is a good place to put your money.
Well, contrarian plays are the things that I do, and it sounds like you're of a like mind. So congratulations on your early move into the MLPs. And, you know, being a contrarian, patience is always a virtue. So, you know, I certainly have money sitting in speculations that I've had for a year or two or even longer. I got in the uranium business very early on, post-crash, and it came back, and then Fukushima's kind of knocked it by the side. But I've been buying uranium companies this summer, so it's always a good thing to... the idea is to buy low and sell high, and a contrarian view allows us to do that.
Absolutely, and that brings us to the next point. So if you're an investor, if you have money, and you're looking to put it someplace because, you know, let's face it, treasuries is like a suicide pact, and the market's looking really shaky. Tell us how you can help people with your publication.
Well, I run a free service newsletter. It's mercenarygeologist.com. I do lots of interviews, lots of radio, TV, and I write about twice a month. I run a sponsorship model, so companies that I choose to be sponsors of my website, I invest in them, and I try to get their story out. So I look for undervalue compared to peers. We launched this business model just about 3 years ago, September, just before the global economic collapse, and we did that on purpose because we kind of saw what was coming. We said this is the bottom of the market, or we will see the bottom soon. We saw the bottom, what, 3 months later, 3-4 months later. We got into some stocks very early on that had good fundamentals. The idea is an investing philosophy I call the power of two, and the idea is you buy things when they're undervalued. When they double, you sell half. You take all your money off the table. You program sell on the uptick. Your remaining position, you take your preserved cash and go and do it again. We also set what I call profit stops for corrections, and you actually sell into corrections too. So you're constantly taking money off the table and redeploying that money. Since launching the business model with the idea that every stock we pick has to double in 12 months or less, or 15 of 17, and the one of those ended up tripling in 13 months. So essentially 16 of 17 in 3 years. And we hope to be able to continue with that record. I will never confuse a bull market for brains. We got in at the low point. We've seen 2 years of the arguably the best market the junior resource sector has ever known. 2011 has not been so kind, but we are still way up in our portfolio this year, and we will continue to soldier on and try to find value for speculators.
All right, Mick, been a pleasure having you on. We're going to touch base with you hopefully on a regular basis. Keep up that great record, because there aren't many others who've managed to pull it off besides you.
Well, like I said, we got in early and we reaped the benefits of a bull market. It's been a little tougher this year, but we've got some good picks right now. And I encourage everybody to go to my website, sign up. It's free. You get all my stuff, notification, and you get stuff before we post it on the website. So it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Sounds great. We'll talk to you again soon, Mickey.
Okay, thanks a lot, Gary. It's been my pleasure.